This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Frida Liu. You're listening to Raise Your Game. Shankar Santiram from EQTD Consulting is here with our series this month on So You Want to Get Promoted, the five keys to get you there. And of course, this is based on his book.
Yes.
We're on to week three. If you've missed the first and the second one, you know, there's this thing called the podcast. Mm-hmm.
First question is, why did you miss it?
Yes. Anyway, you mentioned in our last session that you'd be going in depth this week on upskilling, right?
Yep.
Which is the key number three. How do people decide what to upskill and whether it's going to help them in their job or the industry?
Yeah, last week we talked about what upskilling is. And in fact, that's the third key in wanting to get promoted. But the first thing is you need to understand that you will face a choice when you decide that you want to upskill. Whether you're going to be upskilling for your company or for your industry. Essentially, when you are deciding whether you want to upskill for your company or your industry, you need to know what skills you're looking to develop. What are the areas that you want to do this? My suggestion always to people is initiate a discussion with your boss. And I think that's one of the most interesting things that you'll do. It has a two-pronged effect. First, you will learn what is needed in your company. And then you can direct your learning accordingly. But second and most importantly,
you're telling your boss.
When you pitch up and tell your boss, I want to have a chat with you about upskilling, immediately some bells will start ringing in that person's head. Like, wow, this is a person who really wants to grow and develop. So that's actually the second but more important reason why you would want to perhaps have the discussion with your boss. If you are going to upskill for your company, for your own company, then very straightforward. You know, you need to figure out what is needed in your company. And most of the time, the upskilling here will center around administrative development, for example, marketing strategies, you know, business processes, training and motivation of IT. You know, everyone wants to get more IT skills and so on. And if you decide that that's what you want to do, then you the best option would be to embark on short courses, self-study, on-job training. Attach yourself with someone in the organization who will be able to guide you along the way and understand the nuances of the organization itself and develop strategies of learning based on what your company actually needs. Upskilling in this direction actually makes you a very high performer for your company and in turn makes you promotable. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. The entire book is about getting promoted. Upskilling for your industry is a tad different. When you want to upskill for your industry, you must think leadership, strategy, management, you know, project planning, managing people. These are the things that your industry will be willing to pay top dollar for. So for this, it might be more generic. You might have to go out and do a master's program. If you've already got a degree, you might do that. No, I think very important is you must, whatever skill, whatever upskilling you do, it's not just purely the fact that, say, for example, if you're going to get a master's degree or an MBA or a whatever, if you're an engineer, you're going to get an MSc and something else, right? You are not only sending out a signal that you are, you know, willing to learn and you want to upskill and you want to grow, but you're also sending a signal to people about, you know, their ability to be confident about your capacity and your capability. So qualifications coupled with actually a great attitude actually that, you know, makes you promotable.
I think also, like for me personally, you know, working in organizations in my previous company, I would actually talk about things that I want to improve out of my skills. But I also go off and do things on my own, which sometimes I think doesn't have anything to do with my career, but later on has proven to be beneficial for me.
Right? And that it's that conversation that you need to have with yourself, that discussion you need to have with yourself about what you need to improve on and why you need to do that. And it's the third key. Which is upskilling. Yeah.
So, you know, essentially we need to think about what we want to upskill and why. But with so much on our plates, how do people go about finding time in their busy schedules to upskill? No time, lah.
I know. But it's, you know, one of the fundamental skills for growth is your ability to constantly and consistently be a high performer. We've talked about this in many of the sessions that I've had. And being a high performer simply means that you will need to learn to manage your time patterns better. It's very vital to be able to do this. You know that high performers actually manage the time better than everyone else, right? You know, and I think you and I talked about this before. We need to understand what our time patterns are. All our life is very much a pattern. People who are tardy, you will find, will be tardy all the time. regardless of whether the meeting was moved by half an hour to accommodate them, they'll still be late.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's because it's got nothing to do with the fact that they are late, but the fact that they accept that, you know, lateness is part of my DNA. And some people are very happy to just say, hey, I'm always late, yeah, so start without me. So again, it's a behavior pattern. So you need to find that balance between knowing what you need to do and being effective in what you do. So I think what we need to get our team to do on a day-to-day basis always is to learn to actually clear your mind up and say, you know, I want to get promoted, right? So I know that I'm busy, but I do need to manage my time much better in order to upskill. Because the upskilling per se is something which is going to help you to earn more money.
Mm.
I think if you can connect with the fact that it's going to help you earn more money, then you will actually find the time to do it. So yes, we are busy.
Yeah.
You know, we are absolutely... Are we so busy that we forget to eat every day? Sometimes we might miss a meal, because we're in the middle of a meeting. But when your stomach keeps rumbling and your blood sugar levels come down, you will find the time to actually eat. And I think sustenance, we eat to keep ourselves afloat. I think we need to upskill to keep ourselves promotable all the time. So I think, you know, basically you just need to manage your time.
Okay.
Manage your time and get yourself out there.
I agree with you there. But so managing time is a huge problem for many of us. But what about managing relationships?
It is about managing relationships, because, you know, the reality is you do. And so one of the upskillings that I talk about is, so number one, it's, you know, actually learning. Attending classes, getting yourself upgraded. Then, you know, we just talked about time. Managing your time is one of the upskilling parts that you actually need to remember to do. And of course, one of the priorities in life is your ability to manage relationships with people. We know interdependence is not a new concept anymore. It's fairly cliched. When you combine your knowledge together with other people's knowledge, you grow exponentially, for sure. You produce much, much better results. Now, how effective you are is very much dependent on your ability to manage your interactions and emotions with others. Start by listening. Mm-hmm. Learning to listen to understand what people are actually truly saying. Learn to communicate effectively. These are all, again, things that sound very cliched, but sometimes it you need to connect with the idea that your ability to communicate with someone will help you resolve conflicts, will help you manage emotions, and help you manage conflicts more than anything else. In your communication, I always remind people to remember to be consistent in what you do. Don't dither. Dithering around frustrates people all
dithering.
The time.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, remember to be clear, because, you know, people can't really understand you if they have no idea what you're talking about. And a lot of people do that. And remember that no matter who the person is, what your history is with that person, you actually need to be courteous when you're talking to people. So if you remember these three things, you become much better. So you upskill in this direction. And finally, I think, most importantly, in terms of managing people, this is something which many people forget, is that you have to embrace accountability when you're managing your relationships with people. I've worked with people who are champions, I'd say, at deflecting any performance failure to other people. Nothing, Frida, is ever their fault. Mm. You know people like this. Everything is always someone else's fault. I think one of the upskillings components that we all need in life is to understand that if we say we will do something, we must do it. If we say we will attend to a matter, we must do that. You must complete your tasks. Your relationships with people will deteriorate when they think you are not dependable. So dependability in terms of dependability through accountability is important. But, you know, I've encountered some huge failures in my relationships with people and also in businesses because I didn't actually understand the enormity of this principle, you know, of actually being accountable. Managing relationships is a significant part of personal leadership. And to recap that part, you know, when you actively listen, when you communicate with that, you know, the three C's, be consistent, be courteous, and also be clear, and then you become accountable, people will tend to want to work with you better. And this is an upskilling nature. It's very, very important for upskilling.
All right. And we'll discuss the fourth key, being reliable, with Shankar Santaram from EQTD Consulting. After this, Race Again, BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9. 89.9.
This is Raise the Game. Good morning. I'm Frida Liu. In case you've just joined us, it's our So You Want to Get Promoted, the 5 Keys to Get You There series with Shankar Santir from EQTD Consulting. There are 5 keys. We're squeezing 5 keys into 4 weeks. We were discussing key number 3 earlier on, upskilling. Key number 4 is being reliable. So being reliable is an extremely important attribute to have to becoming more promotable. Mm-hmm. Easier said than done.
Yep.
So what are the steps someone should take, could take to ensure that they actually are reliable and not just think they are?
Mm. I think the first thing is to understand that, you know, research has shown that we all want to be autonomous. We want to be left alone. Hardly any of us likes to be micromanaged. I've always preferred to work with bosses who give me tasks and then leave me alone. Of course, you know, if I needed to touch base with them, get some information, I want to feel like I'm free to go back and talk to them. But, you know, I used to hate, and I still do this, I still hate bosses before and now clients who give me a task and then micromanage me, call me every time, ask me what's going on. I used to get very annoyed. And then I analyzed this phenomenon and I realized that, before I got upset with them, you know, that this all comes down to a trust deficiency. If my boss trusted me enough, he or she would leave me alone. So in my career, working with other people, I tended to put a lot of time and energy and effort trying to make my boss trust me, right? So reliability, now, in order to be worthy of that trust, reliability is the first thing we need to do to stay on point, stay focused. How do we get reliability? Write stuff down. I think many people on a daily basis forget this. I forget this even now. So I keep reminding myself to have lists. Mm. You have to write stuff down, right? And that will make you promotable. This is something I teach all young executives. Everyone thinks it's such a rudimentary, such a kind of, you know, wow, write things down, so old school.
It works.
It works. It absolutely works. And very interesting. I want to give an example, right, so that people might take this a bit more seriously. In 1953, researchers at Yale University's graduating class went to that graduating class of 1953 to determine how many of that graduating class had thought about goals and had written them down. And the answer was 3%, 3% of that graduating class. 20 years later, in 1973, the researchers caught up with the same class and they found astoundingly that very same 3% of the class that had written goals down in 1953 had amassed more personal wealth than all the other 97% put together. 97%.
See?
So listen to the adults, all right? Listen to your parents when they say, write stuff down, put lists down. Classic example, go shopping to any one of the shopping complexes to just do your groceries. Go without a list and leave crying because you've beaten your credit card to a pulp. Yes, because you just randomly pick stuff that attracts your eyeline. Mm. Retailers will disagree with me all the time. They want you to come without a list to their shop because then you'll end up buying. The people who leave with a monthly budget intact are those people who write their goals down when they go shopping. I only need to buy this, and that. If you just walk in. And that this research that Yale did, incredible. Absolutely incredible. That 3% that had written their goals down, more wealth than all the others amassed together, you know, which is shocking in some ways.
I've heard this before, and that always gets me to write a list. It's that your head is not a storage compartment.
Absolutely.
You know, so put it down on paper.
Absolutely.
Use your brain for more strategic stuff.
Absolutely.
Right?
But one caution statement is this. Do the list. Write the maps, do all the flow charts and mind maps and everything else, but always also remind yourself that you need to act on it, right? Mm. The cliche,
right.
Plan the work and work the plan.
Okay, plan the work and then work the plan. But a lot of time people get distracted or get caught up with other things and don't actually work the plan. How do you go about beating that?
Our biggest obstacle for being reliable is procrastination. I think we've discussed this at length. I think we even did
a series on I forget.
On procrastination. You know, it is the biggest obstacle to being reliable. You know when you procrastinate, you'd rather do anything other than what you should be doing. And beating procrastination is vital for high performance as an individual to become reliable. Procrastination happens to all of us. Yes, let's start off with that premise. To overcome it, recalibration. recalibration and learning a few techniques. Start by understanding why you procrastinate. What is the attraction of procrastination? Say, you have a choice of two things. Let's take a simple thing, Frida. You and I, we always talk about eating. Right? Let's think about this. Let's talk about eating. Right? Let's use this as an example. This is my dilemma all the time. Sometimes it's a very simple choice. Should I eat my favorite fried rice for lunch, or should I listen to my wife and have a salad? Okay, it's a very simple thing. Or sometimes it's a choice of activity. Should I finish writing that report that my boss Frida Liu asked me to do, or should I be surfing the internet looking for interesting snippets to use in the radio tomorrow? Jeremy, which should I do? Right. So these are the simple choices in life. You know. What determines your choice is actually quite easy to figure out, I think. The attractiveness of the bad option is always very strong in the here and now. While the immediate attractiveness of the good option, or the punishment for ignoring it, tends to be weak. Right? The tastier fried rice, which is what I want to have for lunch and not listen to my wife, or surfing the internet, is far more enticing now, right now.
Especially if it's overloaded with bacon.
Wow, absolutely. There's a place in Tamantun that does it very well. Attractiveness of the bad option is very strong in the here and now, right now. Right? So that's the whole thing. The good option of eating healthy, listening to my wife and eating a salad, or finishing that report like Frida wants, only pays off in the long run, right? So we always end up choosing the fun option. Literally, it's the fun option, right? And that's how procrastination actually works. And what you need to do, and what we all need to do, which I'm trying very hard in my life to do, is I realized I needed to start making the bad option engage with my senses and emotions right now. You know, because the good option is present in the right and here. So the secret of choosing the good option is to make it vivid, to make it emotional, to make it as compelling as the bad moment. So visualize the better choice. So I don't visualize myself eating that salad or writing the report anymore. I actually visualize how healthy I'm going to look and feel, how slim and svelte I'm going to look, you know, when I start eating the healthy salad. Or I start focusing on that bonus I'm going to get. Or how much more money I can charge my client when I finish this report, for example. So make that the lynch. And when you make that the kind of, you know, attraction, then the long-term attractiveness of that becomes quite clear.
Right. And now I've also noticed that many people have multiple tasks that they need to complete in a day. So once they get started on it, how would they go about completing all of it?
High value, low value, Frida. Mm. We have to decide what is high value, what is low value all the time, you know. Stop doing the things that just don't give you the greatest value. Procrastination comes also with that, you know. Oh, I have to finish that report. You know what I'll do right now? I'll defrost the fridge. You know?
But of course.
You see, the point is you do need to defrost the fridge at some point, but not at this point. Right now, you know, it's not a high value task in the now. I have this argument with my wife all the time. We're sitting outside in the garden and she's going in and I'm saying, oh, can you bring me a glass of orange juice, please? And she goes, yeah, absolutely, no problem. And she goes in, comes back 20 minutes later. And I'm like, can't have taken you 20 minutes to get me a glass of orange juice. Oh, yeah, and I went in and then I went to the kitchen and I saw that we had three glasses that were not clean. I cleaned those three glasses up. And then it turned around that one of the cats wanted to eat something. So I just, you know, the cat at that point asked for food. The husband asked for the orange juice, not so important, but the cat asked for the food for high value, right? So you end up losing what is high value. You know I'm going to be in so much trouble with my wife after this. I must not let her listen to this this interview. But that's essentially it, you know. Meetings, for example. Mm-hmm. One of the big problems that we have, meetings. So, now, this is something which I really spend a lot of time in the book about, right? Now, you might have a three-hour meeting that you are invited to, but your presence is only needed for 15 minutes inside there. The other 2 hours and 45 minutes, you're twiddling around, you're, you know, playing with your phone, you're doing all sorts of other things. How do you not go for that meeting? That's the question. You can't just not pitch up for the meeting. You're going to be in trouble, right? Now, your boss, on the other hand, can give you an exemption to only enter that meeting for 15 minutes. Now, what is a high-value task right now? The high-value task here is to develop a relationship with your boss so that he or she will understand that what you do outside the meeting is far more important than you sitting and twiddling a thumb in the meeting. So I think this is where a lot of executives fall short. They don't cultivate They don't spend time on the high-value task. The high-value task is not sitting for the 3 hours of that meeting, but in fact spending an hour a day over a period of months to actually develop a good relationship with your superior so that you can actually pitch up to them and say, boss, we have a three-hour meeting today. Do you think I can just come and do my part and go? And he or she will say, yes, of course, because, you know, I know you. You're not a cheat. You're not going to be sitting outside there while the rest of us are having a meeting. Or it might simply be the fact that he might turn around and say, okay, you know what? You're absolutely right. Come for the last hour because I'd like you to know what decisions the rest of us also have taken. So that becomes very high value for you to be there. You know, so one of the things that we need to do in terms of this procrastination is learning about the multiple tasks that we handle and decide what is high value and what is not. The biggest high value task for you is to create relationships with people who will give you freedom.
All right. So we're going to continue with this key as well in the final episode with Shankar Santaram from EQTD Consulting. Of course, this series is about his book. So you want to get promoted, the five keys to get you there. You've been listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.